You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 104 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I am delighted to be joined this afternoon by Tiffany. Tiffany, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on. This is exciting.
It is. It's very exciting. As you said, it's your first. There's like a lot of people who come on, they say it's their first ever podcast. It's all always very exciting for your first.
Yeah, I love it.
We've got some really interesting topics to delve into today that I'm really interested to talk about, to speak about with you. And I guess we'll probably intro by saying you do have a child with Hirschsprungs.
Yeah.
So would you like to talk a bit about sort of the beginning and how this all sort of came about?
Great. So my baby, he is almost 5 months old. His name's Hasten. Like Jason, but with an H, Hasten. So we had an amazing home birth. He's my fourth baby. I'm also a doula, so I'm just all about like natural births. Anyway, we had him at home. Everything was great. And then, you know, you just have like your mama gut that just wants to make sure just your kids are healthy, safe. And I just felt like we should go to, you know, just go get me checked out, go get him checked out at the mother and baby at the hospital. So we went and got ourselves checked and they cleared us. Everything was great. I was looking good and healing okay. He was looking great. And then they kept us for 24 hours to, you know, just kind of monitor us. And Hasten had it stooled. You know, yeah, but although it had only been 36 hours. So sometimes my mama brain is like, maybe I could have like worked hard him to stool. But maybe not. I don't know. I know it's not great to go back and look at, oh, maybe I could have done this or that. There's no point. Anyway, he did it in 36 hours, but he did start spitting up some green bile just because of all the buildup of meconium, and then he started spitting up green bile. So they wanted to do, they're like, oh, let's go do some imaging on him. So they do some x-rays and they saw some bubbling in the lining of his intestines, which is called nematosis. And that's like an instant, you know, red flag, get sent to the NICU for that, because that can start an infection and be really fatal in little newborn babies. So that was just some really big shocking news that, you know, everything was great and then it's not, you know, and you get rushed to the NICU. So anyway, but I'm glad that we went and got checked up, because I would rather, you know, catch that in the hospital than be at home and have things go south. So I was glad that we caught it. So they rushed us to the NICU and they're trying to figure out why this baby isn't pooping. So they do a million tests on him. They're telling me like worst case scenarios, I'm a basket case. And they got him started on antibiotic to correct the nematosis so that would all go away and not start an infection. So this is when I started to really be confused in the NICU, was that Hasten was pooping in the NICU. Although they were doing rectal irrigations on him in the NICU just to make sure like all of his stool was coming out, that he was all cleaned out. But like in between he was stooling. They were doing all these tests and, you know, ruling out things that they were diagnosing with him. They're like, oh, he has anal stenosis, and oh, like they were telling me all of these diagnostics. And then a doctor would come in and like, oh, it's not that. So it was just a roller coaster in the NICU. And then at the very end of the 2 weeks, they did a rectal biopsy. And they're like, this could, you know, if this comes back positive, then he has Hirschsprung's disease. So I'm like I'm doing a million Google searches. And I'm looking up Hirschsprung's disease. I'm like, okay, clearly he doesn't have that. So it's going to come back negative. Because the boy's pooping. Like he doesn't have all these symptoms. So all he had was, you know, he didn't pass in the time frame and in the spitting up green bile. But anyway, yeah, I didn't think it was like true Hirschsprung's disease. So I was pretty skeptical about it. So they sent it out. You know, we wait for the results. They come back inconclusive. So I'm like, okay. They're like, okay, we're going to do a second rectal biopsy. And I'm just annoyed at this point. Like, I'm just a frustrated mama. I just want to take me home. And so they send that rectal biopsy to Seattle for like extensive examination. And it also comes back inconclusive. So I'm just like, okay. And so I want to talk to the doctors. They come in and they tell me, you know, what this could mean. They're like, well, his gait. So they tell me about the ganglion cells, you know, that people with Hirschsprung's disease, they're lacking ganglion cells. And that they tell me his ganglion cells are nearby. I'm like, what the crap does that mean? Like, does he have like Hirschsprung's disease or not? Like, they're like, well, yes, like, it, you know, like we are diagnosing him with Hirschsprung's disease and protocol for Hirschsprung's disease is surgery. And because we don't know how much of his colon is affected unless we surgically go in and check. So now they're putting, you know, they're like, so let's get this surgery scheduled. And I'm like, back up now. Like, I don't want to cut him open and remove his colon. Like, it was all just so much to me. It was so overwhelming. And I'm like, the kid is like barely 2 weeks old. And I just want to try like other outlets. They're like, no, there's no other outlet. And my mom, like, it was just we could figure this out. Oh, hop on a surgery right away. So they sent me home. They're like, okay, well, if you're gonna go home, you know, we want you to keep doing these two rectal irrigation every day, morning, night. Oh, I'm like, okay, yeah, like just get us out of here. Like, I'll do whatever. So we go home. They let us go home. They discharge us and we go home and we start doing these rectal irrigations. And I mean, preaching to the choir, like people who have, you know, parents experiencing this, like, it's awful. It is the worst. Like, just like holding your newborn baby down, you know, and just doing these rectal irrigations. And I know you do it because you're doing it for the good of your child. I get that. But, you know, they're telling me all these red flags to look out for, you know, that will lead to enterocolitis. That's like the big thing we're trying to avoid, right? Enterocolitis. So rectal irrigations, but even by the time like our next irrigation was up, he was super distended. And so I'm freaking out, you know, like for these poor anxious parents that I'm sure can relate to me, like your anxiety is through the roof, like trying to keep your baby healthy, making sure they don't, you know, they don't, things don't continue to get worse and worse and worse. So I feel like the irrigations, I'm like, man, like he's not doing well, you know, he has so much inflammation. So I started kind of talking to I'm from Arizona and I have like a team of naturopathic doctors in Arizona. And I started talking to them and they were like, we need to get inflammation down. So I just booked a flight for me and Hasten to go to Arizona. And so we flew there and I just wanted to like get other doctors' opinions that weren't just like surgical route. I just wanted to see what else we could do. So I wanted to get Hasten's inflammation down because he was just getting, yeah, like I said, he was getting distended before the next irrigation. So we go and we started all these like homeopathic remedies stuff. And I also felt like I wanted to try stopping the irrigations. And I got other doctors' opinions on that because, and I started kind of like experimenting. And I know that sounds like, oh, you're an idiot, like whatever, like a lot of parents would say that, but it's just really what I felt like. I felt like sticking the catheter in him was one, giving him a negative relationship with pooping. And he needed that, like, gut, because especially in the newborn, like the first like 4 months, where you develop your gut to brain connection. Like, oh, this doesn't feel good, I need to do this. Oh, that feels good, I'm going to keep doing that. Like that connection is so important. And that forms in your early months of your digestive system developing. So I'm like, okay, Hasten, you know, babies have an underdeveloped digestive system. Let's see what happens if we let it develop. But we need to get the inflammation down. So working with these homeopathic doctors and just having a more holistic whole body approach, we got his inflammation down. His belly was always, you know, was nice and soft within just like a few days. So instead of doing the rectal irrigations, we would use a Windy, which is like a little pipe that you stick in the rectum and it releases any air or a lot of times poop. We call it the poop chute. And so what happened using the Windy, was that instead of spending, because it would take us like 15 to 20 minutes to irrigate this baby. And it was miserable. He's screaming the entire time. Like, he just was like his nervous system, like everything like that I noticed about my baby was just negative. Like, I had this sad, anxious baby all day doing these rectal irrigations. And I was a very sad, depressed mama, like all throughout the day, because I would just be dreading the next irrigation, you know, knowing that it was coming up, and waking up in the morning, I was just dreading the morning. Like, so like we were both just very sad and depressed. And Hasten, this is still when we were doing the rectal irrigations. He was like very tense, and he wasn't before we were doing irrigations. So now we're following, you know, protocol. We're doing what the doctors say, but he was not doing good. Like, so, and your nervous system and your, in order for your digestive system to form, like, you need to be relaxed in order to be stooling. And so everything was, I felt, was working against his body. So those things didn't really make sense to me. I felt like doing the standard protocol and doing these rectal irrigations was leading us down a road towards surgery. So yeah, I just kind of, that's when I, you know, tried to do something different. Using the Windy, he would expel everything within 5 minutes of using the Windy, as opposed to 15 to 20 minutes of screaming, crying baby with the rectal irrigations. So, and I was letting like his nurse practitioner, she was calling every week, and I was keeping her updated with everything we were doing. So I felt like I was doing everything very cautiously, you know, very safely. I don't feel like I was reckless in any way. So, so during the Windy was working for us. And I had a happy baby. I had a calm baby. He was sleeping great. And he started stooling on his own again, which was big. I did have this nurse practitioner. She was like, oh, you know, like we need you to keep following protocol. Like he's at risk for enterocolitis and everything. And she kind of put those fears back in my head. And it just got me so scared. He was like not even a month old at this point. And so I did start doing rectal irrigations again. And it was the same thing that happened. I had a stressed up baby, and he stopped stooling on his own. So I did that for like a week. I got back on the rectal irrigations. And then I was like, hey, no, I want him back on track to what we were doing. So I stopped the irrigations for sure. So that was June 12th. Yeah. So he was just like a little over a month old, when we stopped doing the rectal irrigations, and we got him back on track. Inflammation went down. His belly was nice and soft and squishy, and I had a happy baby, and he started stooling, on his own. So now he's almost 5 months. So, okay. So this is what I have learned. Like, I honestly kind of do feel like an expert in some ways, because I've just talked to like so many people. We're working with GI specialists. I'm working with craniosacral therapists. We go and get Hasten, you know, chiropractor adjustments, just to make sure his body is all in line. Like, I'm doing everything I can to aid him so that he can stool the easiest. So things that I've seen that have helped, I've been off of gluten and dairy. He's exclusively breastfed. So I've been off of gluten and dairy and soy and egg. Okay. So I've noticed that soy and egg specifically make him really congested. Honestly, I still don't know what that is. Like, I've talked to so many doctors, and they, you know, yeah, like he must, like I've gotten him like allergy tested. We went and did like an actual like allergy test, and everything came back that he's not allergic to it, but he could just be sensitive and congested. So when he gets congested, I've noticed he doesn't stool, because he can't like fully like relax, because babies, through their mouth, yeah, their nose. So he can't. So in order for him to stool, he has to be like completely relaxed, because people with Hirschsprung's disease normally have like a shrunken or a tight sphincter muscle, or their rectum is shrunken. So I'm like, okay, if that's the case, then he needs, like, we need to be doing everything we can so that he's like completely relaxed, so that his digestive system can like fully be, you know, fully function to the best of its ability. So we do like a morning and night routine, like his morning. Okay, so Hasten's almost 5 months old. He stools every morning like clockwork. Like, we have him on a really good routine. I feel like his body has just kind of learned this cycle of we do a morning routine and a night routine, which includes like a homeopathic remedy that helps him like digest breast milk. I take like digestive enzymes. I also have upped my magnesium intake, probiotics, and food enzymes. So everything that I'm taking is helping me break down everything, because breast milk is made from my blood. So I'm really careful of everything that I'm taking in. And then I give him probiotics, his homeopathic remedy. We do castor oil belly rubs. And we put magnesium on his feet every night. And then in the morning, so when he stools, it like has to be in the morning. But when he's like the most at rest, he's relaxed, like completely relaxed. And then he'll stool between like 6 and 9 a.m. Like, if he doesn't stool by 9 a.m., like, then, I mean, the day gets busy. He has three older sisters and he doesn't get to relax as much. So that's been like key, is making sure he's in like a very like relaxed state to help him stool.
But yeah, I think this is a fascinating story. And there's little bits that you said there, it's quite a bit you said there that I find really, really interesting. Things like the gut and brain health. I think I was certainly aware that that was, you know, a huge part of a lot of people with stomach issues, not necessarily Hirschsprung's, but obviously with Hirschsprung's as well. And I didn't realize that that was all developed within the first few months. I thought that was a lot later on.
Okay, so yeah, our gut is like our second brain, and the connection that we develop like with our guts and our brain, they form like right in those early years. Very important. It's really like the first like 4 months, and I just find that so interesting that I don't know, like just standard protocol, like I feel like they make it standard protocol just for every single case. They just put a blanket over a Hirschsprung's disease case that everyone needs this, just to kind of, because like every case is so individual and unique that it would be too much to like really formulate that like their own care plan. So I just like, they just put a blanket over it all and just have the standard protocol. Everybody needs to do this. So that's where I'm just questioning it all. And I want this all to get out there more widely known, so that there can be more research, so that every individual case can have their own specific care plan, like for that individual.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's really interesting. You're absolutely right when you say everybody's different. I mean, I guess if everyone was the same, I wouldn't have a podcast. So it is good that everyone's different. Because everybody has sort of different parts affected, whether you've got sort of short segment, long segment, torticollis, whatever that may be. With Hasten, were you ever told how much was potentially affected?
So his GI specialist, I worked with two different GI specialists. Like, I have seen so many doctors. Just to get, like, I want to hear what everyone has to say, you know, and everyone's opinion, so that I can, you know, best go about this for my son. Both GI specialists have told me that he probably has like super short segment Hirschsprung's disease. So I'm like, okay, well, if that's the case, you know, can he manage this throughout his life? And they both said, yeah, they can. Like, and it's because how I see it. I know, and it's crazy, like, talking about this, like, ever since this has all been going on, how many people have been, like, God has just sent into my life that have had issues with, like, constipation and certain things. Because I kind of, I don't know, like, part of me, I'm like, man, like, how many people would be classified as, like, a Hirschsprung's disease case if they went and got, like, a rectal biopsy done or something? Like, is Hirschsprung's disease kind of this like glorified title for like severe constipation, like that? And I know that's arguable, but I just know so many people, and nobody talks about it, because nobody talks about their abdominal meds.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
No, that is the thing. That is the thing. And you're not the first person to have said that to me, that, I mean, because the general sort of amount of people have Hirschsprungs generally is around 1 in 5,000, is what's been told to me and printed in all sorts of journals all over the place. But then speaking to a lot of GI specialists, they have said to me, actually, we think it's lower than that. I've had some that say sort of 1 in 3,500, 1 in 3,000. So, and we'll never know the proper answer, but we'll never be able to count them and all line everybody up in the world and say, have you got Hirschsprungs? But it's interesting that that number is potentially lower. And I can't say that I have mountains of evidence to produce for that. These are just through people I've spoken to. But it's interesting, especially with super short segment or short, really, yeah, very short segment, the amount of people who are potentially don't know that they have Hirschsprungs, I think would be a, because I don't speak to many parents who have children who have short, like really short segment. And is that just because it's really, really rare? Or is that because people don't know they have it? I don't know. It could be a really interesting topic.
And that's what his GI specialist said, is that it is more rarer than maybe, yeah, it's put out as that it's like true Hirschsprung's disease. Because when I think of disease, I'm like, because that's what made me really question. I'm like, why is this called a disease? Is it because every, like all, so many cases that I'm reading on these Hirschsprung's disease pages on Facebook about everyone's stories with their babies are very sick. Like, and is it the hurt, like the lack of ganglion cells that's making them sick? Or is it the care plan they're going about? Because if you have inflammation in your body, you are at greater risk for infection. So why aren't these doctors focusing on getting the inflammation down and having a healthy gut and having a healthy gut balance and like eating that? Because there's so many parts to it. And just with our like experience with the irrigation, one, he's having bacteria introduced into his very sensitive colon, so that didn't really make any sense to me. And I actually got a body scan done on him to detect the types of bacteria that he had in his gut, just everything that was going on with his digestive system. I really wanted to know what was in there. So he had parasites, and I got me done too, and I had parasites. So I did like a parasite detox cleanse. Like if you have parasites, that's going to really affect your gut, you know, balance. And if his gut is so sensitive, everyone has parasites. If you've eaten like fish from a restaurant, or, you know, if you've eaten fast food, like if you've swam in a lake, you probably have parasites. But typically, like with healthy people, you have just a greater amount of good gut bacteria that it, you know, can override the parasites. But if you don't, then those parasites can really cause a lot of havoc in your digestive system. So, and these babies, like they're really sensitive. And so, obviously we wanted to do what we can to like get rid of parasites, but he had like a lot of parasites, and the bacteria that, this doctor saw was specifically bacteria found in hospitals. So from hospital equipment. So I thought that was very interesting, and that's what really made me want to like stop doing the rectal irrigations. So doing all my research on the surgery for Hirschsprung's disease, And then talking to a surgeon and asking him very hard questions that maybe not a lot of people ask him because they just do whatever the doctor says. I'm like, okay, bottom line, it really looks to me like he has the same posing risks whether he does the surgery or not. Because yes, right now he's struggling with constipation. If we go through with the surgery, yes, everything can go great. He may not have any issues for the rest of his life. That sounds amazing. But that's not, you can't guarantee me that 100%. And he says, no, I can't. He says, yes, that could happen, but he could also still be at risk for enterocolitis. He can also deal with severe constipation. He can also possibly experience incontinence throughout the rest of his life. He could possibly need a repeat surgery. So everything, I'm like, where we're at right now for our individual case, it sounds like the best thing for my son is to just approach his condition with a whole body approach and just try to manage it with an intact colon.
Yeah, no, it's such an interesting topic, especially with Hirschsprung's, because everybody, like you said, everybody is different. And I think sometimes the one size fits all approach isn't necessarily possibly the way to go about it. And I'm always open-minded with Hirschsprung's and treatments and whatnot, because over the last couple of years of doing this, I've learned so much of just everybody's different stories. And I'd be really interested to sort of follow how your story goes, because if, let's say, I mean, if everything continues the way it is and it's all going really well, you could very much be a medical phenomenon in years to come.
When I believe the body is so smart and it's like our body is capable, way more than we give it credit for. And I mean, because we know what we know, we know that surgery can correct like certain things, and that's just what people feel safe with, just going with what doctors know. But yeah, I feel like testing, the boundaries and seeing like if there's other routes, is really like that's what we're doing here, and I feel like that's best. And down the road, like because I know they are doing research on like stem cell therapy and things like that. That I talked with his GI specialist, and I know they're just in like the beginning stages of that, but I would rather have my son be a guinea pig for that. Like, we'll be first in line, like volunteers, trivia. If anyone's watching this that knows more about like stem cell therapy and needs, like when it gets into the like working on human bodies and experimenting on like on actual like cases with human bodies, because I know they're doing like mice or something right now. But I would much rather do that than like go through with a surgery. Like I would be very interested in knowing like how the body can develop and adapt. So one of the things that Hasten is taking every day, it's called Ambertose. And this is a supplement. You can look it up. It's by this company called Mantech. But anyways, so the Ambertose, it helps cell rejuvenation, and it helps your cells and like cell like connectivity like with other cells, and it just helps your body like rejuvenate faster. He's been taking this, and I'm just really curious like how well the body can adapt and like learn to manage itself. Even with lacking something, like how he's growing, he's turning 5 months old like this weekend, and I feel like his body's like learning to adapt with what it has. So, because I mean, whether a person's born blind or whatever, like the body learns in other ways to adapt for the just for the body in order to survive. Like that's just how like our brains work. So The body's really, really smart. And Payson will just be kind of an interesting case to see if he can gap to that. And also just with us, like if he needs his whole life to be gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, you know, have like a very specific diet, like I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to teach him, you know, like how to manage this instead of like having to teach him how to manage a colostomy bag or, you know, all these things. Like you got to pick and chew, you got to pick your battle basically. So I would much rather battle this with a whole body approach.
Definitely. I think stem cell, really, really interesting topic. Because I speak to, like you said, if other doctors are listening, and I know other doctors do listen because they've told me that they do. So hopefully they're listening to this one as well. But stem cells are really, really interesting because I was talking to a surgeon, actually my surgeon, who operated on me 30 odd years ago, several times. And we were talking about Hirschsprung's and sort of whether it's curable or whether, you know, whether it's going to be stay as it is now for now until the end of time. And he was very much of the opinion that not within years, but more within sort of several years to maybe a decade or so, he was very, very, I don't want to put words in his mouth here, but he was very kind of optimistic that the experiments going on at the moment are pushing more towards a cure as opposed to where we are at the moment, which is more kind of the management stage of Hirschsprung's. I think people have Hirschsprung's in several different guises, as we mentioned, but people manage them in different ways, whether it's washouts, whether it's irrigations, whether it's with a stoma, with an ace, without stoma, whatever it may be. Everybody kind of manages in their own way, whether it's diet, as you mentioned as well. But to have a potential, whether it's regrowing ganglion cells or whether to have a potential cure in decades would be really, really interesting. And I'm following up with having doing this podcast for a while, you make sort of connections within the doctoring world, and I'm following up with lots of people. So hopefully when, you know, if I'm still doing this in 10 years time, who knows, but then hopefully we'll have more of an idea. I'm not saying that we will have a cure, I'm not saying that for a second, but it's interesting that they are pursuing it and pursuing it quite hard in a lot of places, not just in the UK, but in America as well, doing lots of different tests to see if they can regrow ganglion cells, which I think is really, really interesting. And just on the point of ganglion cells, sorry, go on.
Really quick, like how I think about it, like we're in, you know, 2025 here. Like if you can grow a fetus outside of a womb, you know, you can friggin' turn a male into a female like these days. Like why can't we give my son ganglion cells? Like that's like what I've asked his surgeon, you know, that's just my question. I'm like, why can't we? Because I'm sure we can. Like it seems like a no-brainer to me. So yeah, with stem cell therapy, yeah, with what, you know, the research are doing, I do hope that we find, you know, yeah, like a cure for this of how to better manage it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think, well, I mean, any doctors that are listening, then tell me why we can't grow ganglion cells. Because I'm not a doctor. I have no idea. I'm not even going to pretend like I know.
Ganglions. Like, I don't know. Like,
I don't know. I'm optimistic, having spoken to this surgeon that he's very optimistic, and he knows a trillion times more than I do about everything. So yeah, it'd be really, really interesting to follow that up in several years' time. And especially, you know, if we were to have more of a, whether it's a cure or whether it's a better way of managing, however it comes, it'll obviously be very important for, well, children who are a few months old at the moment. Like, Hasten should be really, really interesting. So there's another part that you said in your story when the doctors mentioned that ganglion cells were nearby, but not in the right place. What did they mean by that? Because I've never heard that before.
I know, right? It kind of made me wonder if, like, who knows? Like, what is the normal amount of ganglion cells in, like, a colon, you know? And ever since talking about this with how many people have opened up to me about their bowel movements, because, yeah, that's not just, like, a normal topic that people talk about. But it's maybe a question, like, oh, maybe I have Hirschsprung's disease. So, yeah, what is, like, the normal amount? So it makes me think that, like, yeah, wherever they took the biopsy, you know, like, yeah, maybe there wasn't ganglion cells there, but, yeah, they, like, so they said they were nearby. So he had he had some, but maybe just not, like, a lot. Yeah. So maybe some people just are born, we're all just born with different amounts of ganglion cells, and some people can get by throughout their life. Some people struggle with constipation throughout their life. But yeah, like, so to me, maybe Hasten doesn't have, like, he doesn't have, like, true Hirschsprung's disease because he doesn't have all the symptoms, and he's not sick, you know, like, because I see with a lot of cases, like, on these pages that I'm on Facebook, is that their babies, they're sick, you know, their 2-year-olds have been sick since they were diagnosed, and they had the surgery, you know, and they've been sick their whole lives, and they've gone into, like, some people, some of these stories, like, they go into the hospital with enterocolitis once a month. Like, these babies are sick. They're having a hard time feeding. They're having a hard time keeping things down. You know, they're spinning everything up, so they're not gaining weight. They're not on their growth chart, like, following along with their growth chart. And so they're behind. They have low, you know, they have low, their weight is down. Like, it's just hard for them to keep on weight. So Hasten is a very healthy, happy boy. He's not sick. He does it. I mean, he spits up sometimes, but it's like a normal baby spit up. Like, and yeah, like, nothing about that kid is sick. He's following perfectly along with his growth chart. So to me, yeah, his GI specialist was like, he doesn't have, like, this, you know, typical Hirschsprung's disease. And then, yeah, just, like, the word, like, Hirschsprung's disease, like, why? It just makes me think it's called a disease because a lot of people, I don't know, I don't believe it's being managed in, like, the best way to make these babies healthy and have a healthy digestive system, especially, like, without inflammation. And that they're sick, and they're just, like, greater risk of getting sick, just because of just what we know now. So I want there to be more research done, more just looking at, like, holistic ways of working with the body instead of, like, doing interventions that work against the body.
No, that makes absolute sense. As I think,
because it sounds like something like leprosy that can get, like, worse and worse and worse, you know?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I know we've gone slightly off topic, but it's cool. I guess my final question really is the future for Hasten. What do you see in his sort of near future?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So I asked, I talk a lot about this with his GI specialist, because we are going to be starting him on solids in a month. And so how I look at it is we're just going, like, he needs, you know, high fiber, low, you know, sugars, like, anything that can cause inflammation in his body, like, he can't have. Like, we're just not even going to risk it. So we're just going to keep him on very high fiber foods, and just do all that we can, keep him on the probiotics, on all these supplements, and if, you know, and so we'll see how it goes. Like, I wanted to talk to his GI specialist if, yeah, just whatever we can do to keep his stool soft and easy to digest and pass. So that will be pretty telling, like how things are going to be going from there on out once he turns 6 months. So But I mean, talking with his GI specialist, I'm like, okay, so let's see, like, worst case scenario before surgery, obviously, because surgery is like my last resort. Awesome. Because once in a while, like, I will give, he's in like a suppository, like if he's congested and he's just having hard time like relaxing and expelling, then I'll give him a suppository. Sorry to be off topic. My brain is all over the place.
Go for it.
But with the suppository, so times that we use the suppository, like when I stopped irrigations, I would use the Windy, you know, to help him like pass gas, kind of like I would call it like we would decompress him. I'm like, all right, it's time to decompress him. So we use the Windy, get out all of his gas. If he hadn't pooped, we would use a suppository. And talking to a surgeon, I'm like, what if we just suppository morning and night instead of irrigate? And he's like, yeah, that's fine. And I, like, as long as you're getting, if you feel like it's getting everything out, which like I felt like it was, I'm like, okay. And like, it just made no sense because I felt like suppositorying him took literally within 60 seconds, everything would come out. That took 15 to 20 minutes to like flush him out with this irrigation. And at least with a suppository, he was still like pushing. Because with irrigations, you're not pushing at all. Like you're doing everything for him and it's ruining that gut to brain connection. So anyway, the suppository was really helpful in like replacement of irrigations. Like I said, I was letting his surgeon know all of this the whole time. So I felt like we were doing everything very cautiously and safely. Okay, so going forward, talking to his GI specialist, I'm like, hey, like, you know, worst case scenario, we suppository him once a day for the rest of his life. Like, I asked, is that manageable? And he said yes, or like Botox and his sphincter to like relax it and things like that. I'm not super on board with Botox just because like it is injecting him with, I mean, literally like toxins are in Botox, like the full name. And anyway, but so I don't really like that route. But if that was like kind of like a last case scenario, I would be willing to do that before surgery is Botox. So there are things I haven't tried that I would be willing to try. So we'll just continue to see how Hasten does. But yeah, like I honestly, I don't know for sure like what the future holds. If he ends up getting surgery in a year or in 10 years or, you know, whatever, but I am hoping that I can hold it off and keep him, you know, manageable, keep everything manageable up until hopefully there is some kind of stem cell therapy, just more research done on what we can do for a lack of ganglion cells in the colon.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so for the future. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing Hasten's story. And just finally, where can people find you on social media and keep up to date with your story?
Okay, so my TikTok is I'm a doula. If anyone needs an online virtual doula, I know how to help you have a baby very, very quickly and as easiest as possible. So my TikTok is Labor of Love 247. I give really great tips on birth and pregnancy and labor and delivery and also postpartum. And then I'm also Labor of Love 247 on Instagram. But my personal Instagram is Tiffo 247, T-I-F-F-O 247. Or you can look me up on Facebook. I am Tiffany Smith. On Facebook, there's a lot of Tiffany Smith.
There's a lot. Fantastic.
Or you can email me. Go ahead and email me, mamalama247@gmail.com. mamalama247@gmail.com.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so, so much for coming on. And I wish you and your family all the very, very best for the future.
Thank you so much, Tom. It was great to talk to you. And yeah, I am... I'm honestly excited for the future. I'm excited to see what the future holds. And we're all just, you know, kind of working together on this journey. It's exciting. So I hope you're the best too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.